Welcome to the QB List Fantasy Football Podcast. This is the Week 2 Sit-Start episode. I am joined by Drew DeLuca. I am Eric Smith. We are very excited to get into some of our more difficult sit-start decisions of the week, go through some streamers, defense, tight end, quarterback, and then obviously running back and wide receiver will hit pretty heavy here. But as always, please check out the Sit-Start article on the website. It should be live by the time you listen to this, unless you're up pretty late tonight. So please check it out. We're going to go through every single player on that one. Every relevant fantasy player will be covered by our staff. So they do some awesome work, but we're going to kind of cherry pick some to talk about here. We actually have some stats from last week to discuss, so this is really exciting. So I'm joined by Drew. We're going to compare his rankings to the expert consensus rankings in general. I'm excited to get into it. So Drew, welcome. How you been doing?
Great. Yeah, living the dream. Four kids keeping my toes and obviously doing some great work here with the QB list. So I'm super excited for the sit start coming out tomorrow. So be on the lookout for that. You can find it on Reddit. We'll throw it out there on X or Twitter. So in the usual spots. So super, it's a phenomenal effort there by our Sitstar team and the editors. So a lot of work goes into that, a lot of research. So super, very proud of that effort. So definitely give that article a good read.
Yep. And they'll call everyone, an RB1, an RB2, a flex option. We'll rank everyone. It's a little easier to compare them that way. You can compare, you know, a wide receiver 2 to a running back 3 or however we have it classified. So definitely good stuff there. I also want to give a shout out to our What We Saw Waiver Wire podcast. We kind of combined those into one on Monday night. I thought our first one was really awesome. Callan Elslager, Mario Adamo Jr., and Brian Hartman did a great job. So every Monday night, Tuesday morning, check that out for Waiver Wire, big picture takeaways from the weekend, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a good podcast. I'm glad we got Brian on that squad there. It was a really good listen. So, while they were recording on Monday night, they actually witnessed the Aaron Rodgers injury live as it happened. So they got to discuss it a little bit, but didn't quite know the severity. So we're going to go into this for our news up top because, Drew, how could we not discuss what are we doing with the Jets without Aaron Rodgers? He's confirmed out for the season with a torn Achilles. What do we do with this team? I think everyone wants to know. Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, lesser degree Dalvin Cook. What are we doing with these players? Are you just bailing without Aaron Rodgers? We're going back to Zach Wilson here. It's scary.
First of all, how poetic is it that a show called Hard Knocks is covering the New York Jets? I mean, sometimes the script writes itself. So, I mean, yeah. obviously the NFL scripted, right? So here we go. It's on the cards, everyone. Here it is. So this is the opening act. So hope you enjoyed that. Four downs, one pass thrown by Aaron Rodgers, and he's done. So, not just like the writers drew it up. So here we are. I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic that the Jets can at least be competitive this year. They've got a lot of pieces around them. They added a lot of talent in last year's draft in 2022. Breece Hall's back, and man, he looked really good. He made a fool out of me. I was fading him everywhere. I did not expect him to look anywhere near as electric as he did. I knew he was fast. Obviously, the straight line speed was there, but man, he looked great. So. Dalvin Cook was on the field. He was getting it done. Of course, Garrett Wilson made an amazing play. That was something, one of the better catches I've seen in recent memory. So, and of course, the defensive side of the ball, they're very solid. They're rock solid. So, and they beat the Buffalo Bills, who were a Super Bowl contender in a lot of people's eyes, without Aaron Rodgers. So, I don't know that we can write off the Jets necessarily. I don't know that we can call them a prohibitive Super Bowl contender like they were with Aaron Rodgers, but they are definitely going to be they're not going to be an easy out for whoever's playing them. They're not going to roll over. So Jets fans, I know you're hanging your head and thinking about what could have been with Aaron Rodgers, but I think you still got a pretty solid team there to root for. So we'll see. I don't think it's a death knell necessarily for fantasy. I think we have every reason to be concerned about Zach Wilson. So it'll be kind of interesting, I think, when Aaron Rodgers comes back next year. He might act. Zach Wilson, if he has a good season, might actually make it hell for Aaron Rodgers coming back from a torn Achilles at age 40. So we'll see. There's so many storylines here, and so many ways that this could go. This could be an absolute disaster, or it could be just a story that we couldn't even dream up. So we'll have to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I think Garrett Wilson, you just kind of have to cross your fingers and hope for the best. He's such a talented receiver. They tend to draw the targets, and it tends to work out. We've seen receivers with bad quarterbacks get it done. I guess my main focus is on this backfield. If they're just not scoring a lot of points, you look at the breakdown from week one. Dalvin Cook had 27 snaps. Breece Hall had 18. Michael Carter had 11. You could tell they were really picking their spots with Breece Hall, because on 18 snaps, he had 10 carries and two targets. So when he was out there, they were using him. Drew, I asked pretty much everyone I could in the Discord channel today, would you try to sell kind of high here on Breece Hall if you had him? Like, when I drafted Breece Hall, I was picturing a really good offense here, one that was going to move the ball with Aaron Rodgers. And everyone just saw Breece Hall look really good on Monday Night Football and break an 80-yard run. Like, is this the time to get out? Like, I hate trading players that are that talented, but it feels like maybe this is your window if you did want to get out from the Breece Hall experience for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think if you have any trepidation whatsoever about the Jets and, you know, how this is going to go from here on out, and you don't believe in Zach Wilson or his ability to kind of take a step with Aaron Rodgers as his guide on the side, then yeah, I think it's a good time to try to see what you can get for him while you're there. So I think that, however, I will say this, that coming back from that ACL later on in the season, come playoff time, I think this is why a lot of people drafted him in the first place. So if you drafted him as a hold and you expected him to be kind of slow out of the gate, then right now, maybe it's not the best time to move. Maybe this is all according to plan and you're just getting a bonus here. So however, if you find someone that's that's willing to offer you the moon and stars for Breece Hall, as if he never had an ACL, as if Aaron Rodgers is still the quarterback of the New York Jets, and you get an offer you can't refuse, then yeah, I definitely would take it. So I think it's all a matter of what you can get for him.
Yeah, it's a really tricky spot. We had a really good discussion in our Discord. Another reason to join PL Plus. Ask a ton of people their thoughts on a trade, and you get a ton of feedback. And we had a lot of people bring up that Breece Hall did pretty well with Zach Wilson last year. My counter was kind of that was before the ACL injury and before Dalvin Cook. So it just worries me if we don't see those long runs, like an 80-yard run, it's going to look a lot different on the stat line. So I'm still on the fence. I don't know if I want to sell high on Breece Hall, but I think I'm there with you. If someone wants to knock me over, they saw that talent on Monday night and they want him on their roster, I would certainly be willing to listen to offers. So I just don't know if the touchdowns are going to be there. And that's what I worry about.
That is a very fair take. And before we get off the Jets, you mentioned Garrett Wilson before. The same argument about Breece Hall, I think, applies to Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson had a heck of a year last year as a rookie, with the likes of Joe Flacco and Zach Wilson and others throwing him the ball. So Mike White, I see no reason why Wilson can't take a step, regardless of who the quarterback is. So I don't think it's a time to panic sell Garrett Wilson. I really don't. I think it's a time to kind of more level set your expectations. He may not end up being a top five wide receiver, but I see no reason why he still won't be wide receiver one, top 12. And I think that's obviously you drafted him to be that. So if you can get somebody who's going to give you top five value for him, then sure. But I'm looking to hold Garrett Wilson and kind of ride it and see what he can do.
Yeah, I agree. He's too talented, dangerous with the ball in his hands. Maybe they'll make a move. Maybe it's Zach Wilson all year. We'll see. But they're going to force feed the ball to Garrett Wilson. I think that's pretty sure. So a little more question with Breece Hall just coming off the injury. So, okay. We got a lot of kind of iffy injury news to get to throughout the podcast. Lots of, are they veteran rest days? Are they real injuries? So I'm not going to hit on a bunch of them up top. Let's just get right into the running back section, Drew. We're going to highlight Drew's rankings, kind of how they compare to expert consensus on Fantasy Pros this early in the week. Obviously, all this stuff's kind of changing as it goes. But let's start with some running backs that Drew is higher on right now. We're going to start with Isaiah Pacheco, who Drew was actually lower on than consensus last week. So right now, Drew has him RB18, only four spots ahead of expert consensus, but still a little bit higher. I'm wondering, Drew, did you see anything last week you really liked? I kind of wonder, like, is KC going to need to lean on these running backs after what their wide receivers did on the opener? Like, is that part of it? Why are you a little more bought into Pacheco this week at running back?
Yeah, I think that's a fair take. I think we saw some very underwhelming performances by the wide receiving corps, except with the exception of Rashee Rice, who did not get anywhere near as much playing time as he could or should have. So that'll be interesting to watch going forward, seeing how that is. There's a lot of empty routes being run by that receiving corps right now. I'm looking at you, MVS. I just kind of feel like there's some questions that need to be answered there. And without Travis Kelce, in the middle, that wide receiver corps was exposed. So I kind of feel like until Travis Kelce is healthy and he's, you know, the kind of Travis Kelce that we're used to seeing from him, I think they might have to lean on their running backs a little bit more. So I'll have taken a look again at the rankings. So I'm not confident enough in Pacheco to necessarily be significantly above consensus on him as long as a healthy Jet McKinnon's running around there. But I will say this, Pacheco did impress me in terms of being a lot more game ready than I expect him to be after two off-season surgeries. So I think I might have been a little too low on him last week. So, but I need to make sure I'm not a little too high on him this week as an overreaction. So, but I do think it's fair that, you know, to expect them to, you know, ask a little more of Pacheco and McKinnon this week, and, you know, with a banged up Kelce and a receiving core that's full of questions.
Yeah, Pacheco played about 48% of the snaps in the opener. Pretty good coming off a couple injuries. Had 8 carries, 4 targets, 4 catches. I actually thought Pacheco and McKinnon looked pretty good, and they didn't use them enough. So, I kind of think there's going to be a little bit of a swing there. If Kelce's back, it's just going to help everyone. So, that's just going to move the ball better. So, I would not worry about that if you have any Chiefs. But, I like Pacheco overall. I kind of worry if he's going to hold up over the course of multiple seasons. But for now, I definitely feel pretty comfortable starting him. I don't know. I like anyone in Kansas City other than the receivers, I guess.
Right.
All right. Let's move along. So I guess we're going to do this one, Drew. Justice Hill against the Bengals this week. You have him RB29. ECR has him RB42. I feel like we've wanted to make Justice Hill happen for quite a few years here. I'm a little worried that we're chasing the touchdowns from last week. Talk me into why we should trust Justice Hill this week in Cincinnati.
Well, phrasing there, first of all, chasing touchdowns, hold on. So, yes, I think the touchdowns help his cause, but no, that's not the only reason why he's a priority add for me. I'm pretty high on him as from a waiver perspective. So I know a lot of people were chasing Josh Kelly, which I'm on board with, and Kyren Williams, which I'm a little softer on. But I think Justice Hill was right in that mix for me. And I think this is a brand new offensive coordinator with a completely different offensive philosophy than what Greg Roman had there. So we can forget any preconceived notions that we have about how Gus Edwards is the automatic rightful heir to J.K. Dobbins. And you can also forget about how Roman had the thing for old retread running backs, even though we have Melvin Gordon sitting there. We're gonna forget about that little elephant in the room for a minute, for just a quick second. Yeah, right. I think he's likely dust, to be fair. I think there's a lot of buzz about Hill this preseason, though, from this coaching staff. And he clearly won a role in the room before Dobbins went down. And we saw that. We saw him being used as such. He was leaned on heavily in key situations, too. So we want players who are going to get red zone looks in prolific offenses. And that's what we believe the Ravens to be, right? So especially when they're, you know, by far the best pass catcher in that entire backfield by a country mile. So Hill is definitely interesting to me with no J.K. Dobbins running around. I know we have the whole narrative about running quarterbacks don't check down as much, and that's probably true to a point. But he's going to see some checkdowns. He's going to see some carries. He's going to see, I think, a lot more work than we expected him to out of the gate without J.K. Dobbins going down. And I think now with him out, he's going to see, I think, a much more sizable role than we expect. So Hill's a guy I think that I'm adding him. I'm flexing him this week. And then we'll see. There is a path here for him to be what we expected him to be or wanted him to be before. So just like Dobbins and just like Gus Edwards, he's had some injury things too and everything else. And so I think he's got an opportunity here. He's got a moment, and we'll see what he can do with it.
Yeah, last week against the Texans, Dobbins played 30 snaps before he got hurt. Justice Hill played 19, Gus Edwards 15. They both were kind of mixing in just as early, too, so it's not super clear. But yeah, Justice Hill, I think, has more left in the tank, at least at this stage of their careers. We'll see if Gus Edwards gets some touchdown work. But eight carries for all three of the running backs last week, so they all got some work. Should be an explosive offense once they get things kind of, you know, on track here with the new coordinator. So I'm not completely out on Justice Hill. It just feels like, man, this Baltimore backfield, Drew, like we've been down this road too much lately. And by the end of the year, like I feel like they're all on waivers or all on benches. And I worry that none of these running backs are useful, but I do agree. Justice Hill is the one I would take a shot on first here.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, too, with Gus Edwards, he did get a 2-point conversion. So I guess that qualifies in some respects as a red zone carry. He's in a short yard situation by the goal line. So there's definitely a play. You know, he's definitely not going to be an afterthought, if you will. But yeah, I think both of those guys bear monitoring of the two I want Hill.
Yep. And the receivers didn't exactly light it up week one. And Mark Andrews is was out week one. And so there's definitely some opportunity here. So keep an eye on this Ravens backfield for sure. All right, let's get to our resident Eagles fan expert here on this situation. The Eagles backfield is going to be a tricky one, probably all season, but especially Thursday night. They've already ruled out Kenny Gainwell at running back. So we're on to DeAndre Swift now. Drew has him at RB30. Consensus has him at RB38. And I think, Drew, you want to move up Swift even higher. So let's talk about Swift and this Eagles backfield and just kind of what you see coming up here on Thursday night.
Yeah, sure. I think consensus is too low on Swift this week. And I think I probably am too. And like you mentioned, I think I'm going to be moving him up probably after I really kind of roll my sleeves up with things here. With because the news broke today that Gainwell was out. So we knew yesterday that he had a rib issue that he may or may not play. So my thought was, if he is going to play, that's just going to muddle things up a little bit. So I'm a little higher on RB 30. It's probably about where I think Swift would be. I expected Swift to get more work, Gainwell to get less of it, to kind of be cautious, I think, with Gainwell a little bit. But now that he's out completely, I think that changes things for me. And I think Swift is probably going to be a strong RB2 for me. I'm not going to say he's going to be a high RB2, but he's definitely somebody for me that's going to be a worthwhile starter. And I think that's probably going to make some people kind of recoil in disgust after this past week. But I do think there's kind of a lazy narrative that's kind of propagating around right now that Swift was bad this past week, when in reality, he only had two touches. So he had one awful drop. And I think that one single play is what people are kind of basing that whole take on. And that's, I think it's kind of a little bit unfair to kind of, judge a player by one play. So unless you're a Boston Red Sox fan, remember Bill Buckner, but I'm old, date myself with that. But Swift was the only running back last week really to play meaningful snaps besides Gainwell. And some think that Penny's going to rise from the ashes, but he was a healthy scratch, and that kind of should speak volumes about how that coaching staff views him relative to Swift and even Boston Scott. And if anyone who hasn't really looked good in that backfield this preseason is Penny. So he kind of looked like he was running through mud with cinder block cleats on this preseason. So he did not look especially, inspiring. I think he had one or two impressive runs here and there, but on the whole, it was not, but he didn't bowl you away. And I know that's preseason and everything else. And I know we've seen what in the past Penny can do. I just don't know that he doesn't seem to have that same burst or electricity that we had hoped to see from him. And I think if he had it, he probably wouldn't have been a healthy scratch. That's just kind of my take on that. So we've seen what Gainwell is. He's kind of a jack of all trades, master of none. He's nothing super special. He's definitely competent. He can do, I think, a lot of things well. To me, I think Boston Scott's kind of a similar player in that respect, where he can do a lot of things well, but not be super special. So I think they kind of have some different pieces in this backfield that all have different strengths, if you will. So let's not forget, though, whoever does line up in that backfield is going to play behind the league's best offensive line. And I think the last time Swift played that role as a lead back, he torched the Eagles, actually, at the start of last season when he was with Detroit. I mean, he was just a man on fire. And I was like, okay, this guy is going to be amazing this year. And of course, he did what DeAndre Swift does and got hurt. So, and then they limit his touches, which could be a thing. But I think he gets at least 15 touches this week. That's going to make some people open their eyes. And I do think he's going to break at least one big play, potentially for a long touchdown. So he's that explosive. He's that electric. And I think that the Eagles' blocking scheme, I think, is going to be huge for him. So Sirianni was asked today about his role. And he said, listen, some weeks he's going to be the guy. He's going to carry the load for us. Other weeks, he's going to give you what he's going to be, what he was this past week. So to me, that's kind of a veiled intimation that we should probably expect a bigger role from Swift, considering the fact that there is no Gainwell, that Boston Scott was the only other field running back besides him, Swift and Gainwell to see the field. And I need to see something from Penny before I get excited. So I think that Swift's the guy by default. And, we know what he is as far as his talent. So I think this is a potential smash spot for him. And I think you're able to kind of sneak him in there as a running back too, or flex with the tremendous upside potential there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, if you look at the usage from last week against New England, a tough matchup. Kenneth Gainwell had 41 snaps. DeAndre Swift had 19. Gainwell crushed him in carries, 14 carries to one. But if you look at the routes run, Gainwell ran 16 and Swift ran 13. So Swift was running routes. They're going to use him as pass catcher. nobody really caught passes last week other than Devontae Smith and AJ Brown. It was just a tough week. They're playing a good defense, but Gainwell had the third most targets on the team last week. So yeah, Swift is the one that's going to fill in for that role more than anyone else. I still don't know what to think of this backfield long-term because I never understood, like, was Gainwell, did we really think he was going to hold up all year to this workload? Like, I don't know really what their plan was. Yeah. Maybe it was just a week one thing, but I still think Penny might have some weeks. I think you could definitely cut him at this point, but I wouldn't be surprised if come week 8 or 9, Penny is useful, but I don't know. It's going to be a backfield to monitor all year. I'm kind of intrigued how this ends up settling.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think it's a very fair take of the backfield. I just think that Swift is right now set up to earlier than I think most of us expected to kind of, you know, position himself for kind of a smash spot. And I think this is the first one of the season. And we've seen him smash in spots like this before. We've also seen disappoint, to be fair. But yeah. I'm rolling the dice on him this week for sure.
And have we seen any indication of how long Gainwell's injury is? It seems to be relatively minor right now. Just kind of the short week is probably the biggest issue. I'm not sure we have a ton of details on it.
Yeah, he didn't practice Tuesday, and he was listed as a non-practice on Monday. Okay. And the fact that he didn't go today, they ruled him out. I think it's more likely he would have played if they played on Sunday or Monday. But we'll have to see. It's, you know how ribs are. I don't know the severity of the injury, but it could be something that, you know, a 2-week thing. It could be something that lasts for, depending on how serious the injury is, for a couple weeks. So, but in the meantime, you know, Swift has his opportunity. I think Scott might probably see a few more snaps than he did before, obviously. And I would be surprised if Penny is a healthy scratch again. I think he'll probably get at least elevated the roster. And in true form, it wouldn't surprise me at all for Swift to get a lot of work and then Penny to come in vulture a touchdown and make us all look like idiots. So we'll see. Yeah.
Yep. Who knows, though? It could just be Boston Scott. Definitely monitor it. But yeah, I do agree with you. Swift feels like a pretty safe play this week. Knock on wood. All right. Let's get up next on running back here. We've got Joshua Kelly, running back for the Los Angeles Chargers. Drew has him RB33. ECR has him RB41. I'm sure this ranking is in flux, too, as the week goes on. But Austin Eckler has an ankle injury. We're not sure how severe it is. It doesn't seem like it's really serious, but Joshua Kelly saw a big workload anyway last week. So do you think Joshua Kelly like qualifies as a flex play, or are we just kind of waiting on Eckler's status right now before we think about playing him?
I think he's flex worthy because I think even if Austin Eckler plays with an ankle injury, they're probably going to limit his touches, I would think, so that he doesn't aggravate it or make it any worse. So we'll see. I mean, I think it's fair to expect Kelly to play a larger role. And interestingly, Eckler did not practice today. He did. I did see a podcast though today pop up with from him that he had with Matt Harmon, in which he was touting Joshua Kelly, and he was talking about the fact that he could see a situation where both of them are productive from a fantasy perspective. And he made a reference to Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Now, I don't know how those two guys profile together. I think it's a little bit of a stretch, but as far as the particular players, but I kind of get what he's trying to say there of, hey, listen, there's two guys here that are productive on this in the same backfield. There's no reason why both guys in this backfield can't also be that. So irrespective of whether or not Eckler plays, I think Kelly has some standalone value as a flex. And I think if Eckler doesn't play, then I think obviously Joshua Kelly's value shoots up and skyrockets. And he's, to me, a solid starter.
Yeah. Now keep in mind, they're playing Tennessee this week. Tennessee's been a notoriously good run defense. They kind of held it week one, too, didn't give up much to the Saints. So it's a tough matchup for sure. They're kind of a pass funnel defense. Teams tend to pass a lot on them. But I went out and added Kelly in a lot of leagues. I've been waiting for at least someone to emerge as the handcuff in this backfield. It finally happened just because Eckler's role is so great. So Kelly is at least a really good handcuff, it looks like right now. What do you have, like 16 carries for 90 yards last week or something? So like he's at least a good handcuff. Maybe we have some flex value. But yeah, if your waiver run passed and he's still out there for some reason, I would scoop him up. I'm going to be a little hesitant to play him just because of the matchup, but we'll see what happens with Eckler here. All right. I think that covers the players you're higher on, according to consensus. So let's get to some of the players you're down on here. We're going to start with Damian Pierce. It's only 5 spots lower, but you have him RB23. ECR has him RB18. So still RB2 territory. But do you have any reasons why you're down a little bit on Damian Pierce this week? I know it's you know, it's the Texans. Maybe that's all I need to say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I was kind of down on Pierce compared to consensus going into this past week. I was lower on him in my draft rankings than consensus for sure. And I expected Devin Singletary to play a larger role, frankly, than he did this past week. But Pierce is actually out-targeted by Mike Boone, of all people, who ran almost as many routes. He only ran three fewer routes, despite 11 fewer snaps. So I can't shake that feeling that Singletary is going to play a larger role in the coming weeks. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. But one way or the other, I think Pierce only had, 11 carries and three targets. So that doesn't sound like bell cow volume to me. I don't know that he's going to be that ball cow guy that most of them wanted to be. And he's a part, if he's a part-time back in a lousy offense that's with limited receiving upside, that's not something that interests me enough really to make him a top 20 running back. I think he was, like I said, overdrafted to start with. So I think it's time to kind of be honest with ourselves a little bit about what his role is on a bad football team. And that's not going to give him a lot of game scripts to really kind of shine and be, you know, the Damian Pierce that we want him to be. So I think CJ Stroud has to show more a command of the offense, and he has to show a little bit of rapport with receivers who frankly aren't very good. So, and then to be fair, John Metchie was out, so he wasn't there, and he might be end up being one of their best receivers. But yeah, you're looking at, you know, the swan song of Robert Woods, most likely. You're looking at Nico Collins, who we want to be something. He might be something. We don't know. You know, and then of course, Mechie's an unproven quantity as well. So there's not a whole lot there in that offense to really kind of make defenses be honest, play honest with them. And so I just kind of feel like we're expecting a little bit too much of Pierce still. And I think consensus at running back 18, I think, as a saying that he's a solid running back too, I think that's asking a lot. So I have him as RB23, which is a low end running back too. So like, I'm not terribly lower than consensus, but I think it's enough to say, hey, listen, we need to pump the brakes on looking at this guy as a legitimate every week starter.
Yeah, and I want to be higher on him. Home game against the Colts should be a nice little matchup for him. But yeah, the usage week one was disappointing. They were using him a ton in the preseason, like a three down back. We were kind of hoping that would stick, and it did not. 36 snaps for Pierce, 25 for Mike Boone, 16 for Devin Singletary. So that's a pretty healthy split there. That puts him below 50% of the snaps. So yeah, not quite the usage we were hoping for. This is not a bad spot, but I agree. He's not quite bell cow status where we can just kind of close our eyes and start him every week. So we'll see. Hopefully Stroud picks things up and the offense improves a little bit. So,
right.
All right. Another disappointing volume running back here. Rashad White for the Buccaneers. You've got him RB24. ECR has him RB19. It was a pretty ugly week one stat line, even against the Vikings, which should have been a decent enough matchup. So why are you down on Rashad White here?
Well, hi, I'm Drew, and I'm a Sean Tucker truther. So we'll start off with that. So enough said there. So, yeah. But I have Rashad White as a low end running back too, and which basically, you know, running back 24 is basically bottom of the barrel running back too. But to me, that means he's also a flex worthy player. So, however, I think Tucker is the better player, frankly. I think I'm not going to apologize for that. I think it's only a matter of time before he starts chipping away at that role, and taking on a larger and larger role. And I won't be surprised at all when he takes it over by the end of the season. So, yeah, I just said that. But beyond that, we have this possibly false narrative that kind of props up White's value that says that Baker Mayfield's a check down quarterback. And I mean, maybe if there's data to support that, I think there is. I've seen that. But I will also say that there's context that's missing here, and that he spent most of his career in Cleveland with a largely uninspiring group of wide receivers that did not include Mike Evans or Chris Godwin. And so I think that that context is very, very important here. So Rashad White ran 21 routes, and he was targeted only twice. So that's not good. $5 drew more targets than he did, and two others drew the same, just as many. And one of them was Tucker. And Tucker drew the same number of targets despite running only 4 routes on 10 snaps. So that tells you something. So he was on the field and they made a point to give him the football. So that's 17 fewer, you know, routes than Rashad White, the same amount of targets. So that's not a good omen, I think, for Rashad White truthers.
Yeah, I will say this is a really good matchup. Chicago gave up the second most fantasy points to running backs last year. They're my 1 week sample, but they're already third this year. The Packers running backs scored some touchdowns on them. So it is a nice matchup. Rashad White did dominate snaps, 54 snaps to 10 for Tucker, 8 for Edmonds. But yeah, I have never been in on White this offseason. Like, his efficiency was really bad with Tom Brady under center. And I know that Brady was not the same last year as Brady was previous years, but still, if he couldn't get it done with Brady last year, I just never understood how this was going to work this year. So maybe this matchup floats him for this week. I don't know. We'll see. But I think last week for Rashad White, 17 carries, 39 yards, 2 catches for 10 yards. I think we're going to see a lot of that this year. So I'm pretty much out on him, but I do get it. It's a volume player, good matchup. So if you have to start him, I'm not feeling too bad, but I'm certainly looking for other options, especially long-term.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier about Breece Hall in a trading window. I think if Rashad White lights it up against the Bears, I think you move him, because I think you're not going to find a better sell high window than you for Rashad White than you will in that particular moment. So I think the writing's on the wall that Tucker is the better player. And if he does smash in the spot, I think that's an opportunity for you to get a lot of value potentially as from somebody who perceives him as an every down or every week starter. Solid every week starter. I think you can get really good, nice receiver or something like that for him. I'm all in for that trade.
Yep, totally agree. Okay, let's get on to the Denver backfield. Drew's a little bit lower on both of these running backs, Javonte Williams, Samaje Perine. They are RB 34 and 35 respectively in Drew's ranks and 27 and 31 in consensus ranks. So anything about them in particular? Is this just kind of being out on the Broncos? What do you think about the Denver backfield after 1 week?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. It's the Broncos. So I think we had this kind of, well, maybe Sean Payton can come in and maybe he can spark this magic and turn Russell Wilson into this guy that's just going to light things up. And Jerry Judy is going to be something. Well, if Jerry Judy's hurt, and Cortland Sutton is going to be something. Okay, well, he had a touchdown. Rather than that, it was a kind of a mid kind of a day. And Marvin Mims, who I was really high on, did absolutely nothing. So, and you had very minimal involvement. So, I mean, that whole offense just looked like a mess, and it was the Raiders.
Yeah.
Like by all accounts, the Broncos with some of the talent they have with the coaching, they should have rolled that team. And it was embarrassing. I mean, you look at that, it's just disappointing. So I'm looking to get out from under, the Broncos right now. I don't feel it for Russ. I don't feel it for that offense. Javonte Williams coming off of not one, but two torn knee ligaments. Definitely is something that I think is going to, kind of have a little bit of a pall over his value or his prospects, I think, for the entire season. He never was a bell cow to begin with. He's always been a guy who shared carries going back to UNC. Michael Carter was there. So he's never been a guy that's ever carried the load. Maybe high school he did. I don't know. But he certainly didn't do it in college, and he hasn't done it yet with Denver. So I think there might have been a stretch here and there of like 4 or 5 games where he did, but he hasn't shown that he can do it for a full season. So coming off of 2 knee ligaments, I'm a little worried about that. Perine actually looked okay. He was actually more efficient per touch. I'm just not high on either until this offense starts looking a lot less dysfunctional. So if I had to pick one or the other to start, it's probably going to be Perine. To me, they're like emergency flex options. Both of them are.
Yeah, they split snaps right down the middle, I think 29 and 29, so even split here. I mean, the encouraging part was H had 4 catches, so a little bit of passing game work from Russ, but it was on 4 targets and 5 targets. Like, they caught every pass thrown their way, so not a lot of room for error there. And then, like you mentioned, I mean, the Raiders, that was a good matchup. Raiders were, what, third? They gave up a lot of points to opposing running backs last year. I think top five. Yeah, fifth most to the position. So they didn't exactly light them up. So, yeah, Perine did have a nice little catch and run down the sideline. He's got a little spring in his step. He's never going to be a complete bell cow either. So I'm kind of out on this whole offense. And maybe after a few weeks they hit a rhythm. But I think with the depleted weapons at receiver – and Russell Wilson at this stage of his career, I'm just kind of fading just about everyone here for the most part.
Yeah.
Okay. It is what it is. They're going to play in a bunch of 17 to 16 games with that defense. So
yeah.
Get used to it. Yep. All right. Next up is our Discord sit start special of the week. We got a couple questions that were kind of positional crossovers here. So we're going to spice it up this week. This is from Matthew Cava, one of our longtime writers. He does everything, sit start, what we saw, a little bit of everything. So he's been one of our core staff writers for quite a while. So happy to help Matthew out with a question here. He asks, in a flex full PPR league, are you playing George Pickens or Tyler Algier in your flex? So full PPR, Pickens or Algier?
Well, I'm tempted to say Algier, but I'm very cautiously tempted to say Algier. And because Bijan was the clear featured back in the first half, Bijan Robinson kind of exploded onto the scene. And I mean, he just right away with that impressive touchdown just showed everybody why he was a first round draft pick. So I'm not sure that I want to bank on Algier getting two touchdown games from here on out as Bijan continues to learn the offense and I think take on a larger role going forward as he does. So I still think Algier could play a decent role, a sizable role in week two, maybe even week three. But I think by the come to the home stretch of the season, I think it's going to be Bijan much more heavily than what we saw this past week. So, but right out of the gate, though, in the first half, Bijan definitely outtouched Algier. I don't think Algier got a target at all in the first half, whereas Bijan had five of them. And obviously, I think was more productive back in the first half. So, in full PPR, I would normally want the wide receiver in this kind of situation where we're not quite sure about which way to go. But Pickett was dreadful. Kenny Pickett was just dreadful last week against the San Francisco 49ers. So, and I know the 49ers are obviously probably the top defense in football, but the Browns are no joke. And they just handed Joe Burrow and the vaunted Bengals offense, sorry, Eric, a major beatdown, frankly. I know the weather kind of played a role in that to some extent, but they played well. The defense definitely came to play. And as much as I love Pickens and his tantalizing ceiling, he just feels like the riskier play here to me. So I kind of feel like Algier is the way I'd go. And it kind of goes against my constitution in some ways, but I think I just kind of feel like he's the right play.
Yeah, I mean, he ended up with only four less snaps than Bijan last week. I would expect that to, you know, closer games and, you know, as Bijan gets more involved in the offense, maybe that to grow a little bit. But yeah, Algier's being used a lot. I neglected to mention the matchups, but they get a Green Bay defense that's generally been susceptible to the run for the most part. So, yeah, I don't know. Pickens is enticing with Deontay Johnson's injury for sure. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
The Steelers offense looks so bad that I don't want to play one. I also don't want to overreact to 1 week. So that's what makes this a tough decision. I understand why Matthew asked it for sure. So, yeah, I feel like I'm waffling on it as well. But I don't know. Maybe ride the hot hand with Algier. Like, I know it's only 1 week in, but he feels like the hotter play right now. And let's let Pittsburgh sort things out first before we trust him too much.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair just to say that Pickens could get more volume as a result of Johnson being out. I do think that the people are going to get the biggest bump from that are probably going to be, number one, Freiermuth. Number two, I think you might see more Najee. You might see more commitment to the run game to try to take some of the pressure off Pickett. Najee didn't have that many carries last week, and Jaylen Warren did not look like a man possessed either. So I feel like they could probably get more out of the running game. And I think in doing so, that kind of probably be the key to kind of help Pickett kind of get on track.
Okay. Not bad options though, all things considered for the flex. Yeah. So I wouldn't feel too bad either way. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's get into wide receiver here. Before we get to the higher and lower of Drew's rankings, I kind of felt like we just need to have the Rams talk here, Drew. Waiver runs are already gone, so you've already had to make your decision on the waiver wire. But what are we doing with Puka Nacua and Tutu Atwell for the Rams? First of all, just the names alone, but it's really hard for me to buy into these guys. And then you see the targets week one, and it's hard to fade them. So what are your thoughts on this Rams receiving core? Who knows how long Cooper Kupp's out for? Like, this could be a real huge opportunity here.
Well, I will say this, so that Puka Nacua had some very strong and very vocal small contingency that kind of banged a drum for him all throughout from the draft, actually, all the way through the preseason. And they're just having a huge party right now. So, and I will say this, I kind of feel like that his breakout, it kind of in part happened because Cooper Kupp wasn't there and he was able to kind of, you know, fill some of the roles and do some of the things that Cooper Kupp does. And I don't want to take that away from Puka either, because we've been waiting for Van Jefferson to be something for a while now. And Van Jefferson has not been something. Puka Nacua goes in there one game and absolutely blows up. Yeah. So I don't think we can discount him. I think he's a definite add. If for some reason nobody added him in waivers, I'm actually in one league on Yahoo where no one put a waiver claim in for him, which is unbelievable. So I was able to pick him up for free today in that league, which was astounding to me. So, and I'm happy with that. So I don't know that they're going to be up in games like they were against the Seattle Seahawks very often. I'm not going to sit here and say that the Rams are going back in the Super Bowl because they played in week one. I still have a lot of questions about that team. But that bodes well for the passing game. They might, if the negative game strips happen, they're going to have to throw the ball more. So I think Puka is definitely a guy that I'm adding. I'm holding him, but probably starting him as a flex. We'll see how it goes from here when Cooper Kupp comes back. Cause I think his role will kind of diminish somewhat when Kupp comes back. Cause I presume the Kupp will continue to be the alpha. And I think that means a little bit of a lesser role for Nacua. And Tutu Atwell came in. He had a good week. He's a field stretcher, obviously. He's tiny. You know, we make Deuce Vaughn jokes. I think Tutu Atwell isn't too much bigger. So, but that being said, you know, he was productive. So he's a field stretcher. And as long as Matt Stafford's upright and able to sling it, then, you know, Tutu Atwell has some value potentially in larger leagues. So I think his role might even be safer than Nakua's when Kupp comes back. Not that I think he'll outproduce him, but I just think he might see the field a little bit more, but we'll see. It's interesting. So, but yeah, I think Van Jefferson we were trying to make him a thing there for a while. I think we can just kind of fade him out, put him out to pasture now. I think it's over. It's done. Just give up the dream for Van Jefferson. It's clear to me that, that these two young guys, definitely are ahead of him in the pecking order, and they deserve to be.
Yeah, I don't know that we were in on Nacua, but I believe last week we told everyone not to get too excited about Van Jefferson. So we at least got that part right. We were at least on that. So yep. It's funny for me how quickly I go from I'm not going to trust Puka Nacua, who's a fifth round pick, to he just got 15 targets. He's for real. Like, as soon as I see that usage, I'm kind of in. But
right?
I don't know. Yeah. Against San Francisco, I would definitely not start Tutu Atwell. I understand if you want to start Puka Nacua, but I don't know. We'll get to some stats on Stafford against San Francisco later, but it's a tough matchup. It's a divisional game. So yeah, I think it's, yeah. I guess Seattle was a divisional game too, but that defense is nowhere near San Francisco's.
Absolutely. And I agree with that take. I think it's worth flexing Nacua, but I think expecting to him to repeat what he did this past week, I think is definitely a tall order against that defense. But he should see a lot of targets again, though. That's the thing, because this time I think there will be a negative game script, and so it might be a different story as far as what he's able to do with those targets. But he'll definitely see the volume.
Yep. All right, let's get on to some receivers that Drew is higher on. Let's start out with Chris Godwin. I believe this is 2 weeks in a row for Godwin too. Gets a home matchup against Chicago. You have him wide receiver 15. ECR has him wide receiver 22. Were you encouraged by anything in particular last week, or you just think the market's still behind on Chris Godwin here?
Yeah, I think the market's a little bit behind on him. I think there's this kind of specter that he's coming off of injury, but it's over a year removed now. At age 26, coming off of an ACL, I think he's 100% over that. So he didn't really break out last week because it was Mike Evans' turn really to kind of click with Baker. But I think Baker actually looked pretty good last week. I don't think it was a 1 week fluke. I think the locker room kind of bought into him this preseason, and I think you saw it on the field. He looked in command, and he looked comfortable. And we'll see. We'll see how it goes from here. But I think Godwin gets his due this time around. And I think it's kind of, we've seen that with Tampa Bay. 1 week it's Mike Evans. 1 week it's, it's Chris Godwin. And I think that's just kind of true no matter who's calling plays. And I expect Godwin to have some big weeks. And to me, it feels like this is one of those weeks. So even if I were to fade him down to where expert consensus has him, he's still a wide receiver too. And he's going to be a definite starter in just about all formats.
Yep, he was second in targets, played a ton of snaps. So, yeah, it's same old Chris Godwin. We just got to see what the ceiling is on this offense. So, all right, next up, DJ Moore at Tampa Bay. Bears passing game was kind of rough last week, Drew. There's all kinds of Twitter videos going around the internet, people dissecting their scheme, and Bears fans are pretty down in the dumps. But I would generally agree with you being optimistic on DJ Moore. He's super talented. I don't know if I'd have him wide receiver 19. Where you have him, but ECR has him wide receiver 25, so you're not that far ahead. But what do you think about DJ Moore, just kind of closing your eyes and hoping that the talent comes through here?
Sort of. I mean, consensus has him as a high-end wide receiver 3. To me, he's a low-end or mid-to-low-end wide receiver 2. So I'm not exactly putting him on a pedestal and shining bright spotlights on him, but he is talented. He really is. So I was higher on him in my draft rankings, I think, than consensus. Not by a ton, but definitely by some. And I just kind of believe that this offense is going to end up figuring it out. I believe Fields is going to end up figuring it out, and I believe that Moore is going to end up doing better than he did. So I do worry. I don't want to see them fall back in the same kind of game script pattern where they had the play calling pattern they had last year, where they ran the ball so often and passed so little. So I think that doesn't really do Fields any favors as far in his development. Obviously that would crush DJ Moore's value there, kind of like poor Drake London in Atlanta. So yeah. Anyway, I think Moore is talented. I think I'm just trying to overreact less than consensus to kind of what happened last week more than anything. That's really where I am with DJ Moore.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way they're going to look at this and see that they had 15 targets to the running backs and then only two to DJ Moore and not want to change that. I mean, Darnell Mooney had 7 targets. Like, they're practically kicking Chase Claypool off the team at this point. Like, they want nothing to do with Claypool. Like, yeah, other than Cole Kmet, I can see those 7 targets being real, but they're going to have to get DJ Moore involved. So we see that plenty. A wide receiver has a down week and they feed him the next week. So yeah, Tampa Bay is a tough team to run on. I think they are going to have to put it in the air. So let's cross our fingers. Hopefully DJ Moore can make some plays with the ball in his hands this week. So
yeah, well, right. Hopefully it looks like Chase Claypool might be a healthy scratch this week. I saw some buzz about that today for some beat reports. So we'll see what happens with that, because he wasn't doing anybody any favors with his blocking or lack thereof, you know, for screenplays, for anything else. So we'll see what happens with that. I definitely agree with you 100%. I think it's a tremendous take about, you know, you're 15 targets to running backs and 2 to DJ Moore. What are you doing?
It's wild. So, yeah, they got to get him the ball. They gave up too much for him. So I think that'll change. All right. Next up, let's get to Gabe Davis. He's got a home game against the Raiders this week. You've got him wide receiver 28, ECR, wide receiver 33. It's not much of a difference, but I thought it was kind of worth talking about this Bills passing game. Like, nobody stepped up other than Stephon Diggs. I mean, you know, Kincaid looked okay. But still, this offense is going to rebound. Somebody is going to step up here, right? It's not just going to be Diggs.
Yeah, well, let's be fair too. They played the New York Jets, who have arguably the best secondary in football. And so, I mean, I expected Josh Allen to have, you know, be Josh Allen, but I expect him to struggle a little bit at times as a result of that. So, but I do think that he needs to stretch the field really to kind of get his mojo back after last week. Which means I'm rolling the dice on a kind of Gabe Davis boom week here. I'm doing it cautiously, but if I was really all in, I'd probably be ranking him higher than wide receiver 28. But being above consensus, I'm more than okay with that this week. So keep me in your prayers. You know, kind of like that pilot in was it Independence Day when they're ready to take on the alien mothership and they're like, good luck, buddy. So I kind of feel like that's what you're doing if you're betting on a Gabe Davis boom week. So you might end up being the hero. We'll see how it goes. But I'm feeling the vibes this week. So I'm rolling Gabe Davis in flex for sure.
There's been a lot of alien talk on the internet last couple weeks, so it's I don't know. I think it might have been a hoax, but we'll see. Hopefully it works out here. But the Bills were running a ton of 12 personnel, 2 tight ends last week, and that means that it's Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs, a wide receiver, when they do that. So Davis played a ton of snaps, ran a ton of routes. I know that's kind of the joke with him. He's just out there running wind sprints, but I don't know. It was all the tight ends and Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs. So yeah, he's going to hit eventually. It's just a matter of how many frustrating weeks you have first. So I don't mind him as a long shot play.
Well, good news is he's got one of the two games against the Jets out of the way. So
yeah, exactly. All right. Next up, Zay Jones against Kansas City at home. He is actually one, Drew, that is sitting on waivers in one of my leagues, and I just keep eyeing him. I want to pick him up. I don't know if I have room for him, but Zay Jones looked pretty good week one. You've got him wide receiver 33. Consensus has him at 43, which seems too low to me. So it's probably just as simple as buying in on this offense, right, with Trevor Lawrence?
I think it's a little bit more than that, actually. So his snap share is more secure right now than Christian Kirk's, which is astonishing when you think about it. But because that Kirk's coming off the field in 2 receiver sets, which means that frankly that Zay Jones is going to play more than Christian Kirk. Which you know, there's going to be games where Kirk's going to outperform Jones, he's going to out target him sometimes, depending on script, depending on who they're playing and what the matchups are like there. But by and large, Zay Jones had 82 catches last year for 823 yards and 5 touchdowns. And he now has a secure role and an ascending offense. Now, I know Calvin Ridley's there, and I get that. And Calvin Ridley showed us that, yes, he is for real, and yes, he is an alpha. But Zay Jones still was productive, and I think we need to put some respect on his name. So he's gonna play a role. If we're gonna be buying in on wide receiver twos and prolific offenses like we do with Miami, like we do with Philadelphia, like we do with the Bengals, all those look at where Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith and T. Higgins are going in drafts. I'm not saying Zay Jones is that same caliber of player, but he doesn't stink. And I kind of feel like his role is kind of underappreciated, and I think that we probably should be higher on him than we are. So I have him in several leagues. I added him in a couple more, and I'm flexing him in a couple of them as well. So I have, especially in deeper leagues for sure, there's no reason why Zay Jones should be on waivers.
Yeah. Another thing that's really nice here is that Zay Jones, 61 snaps, Ridley, 57, Kirk, 43. They only gave five other snaps to receivers. So, like, they're playing just those three guys. Zay Jones led the receivers in snaps, second in routes run, second in targets. So he is out there a ton. And they're not doing much of a rotation. So, I like Zay Jones. I think he's a solid play. If he's out there on waivers and you got some injuries, go pick him up, because he did this last year. So I don't see what's going to change. So. Okay, let's get to some players you're lower on. We're going to start with Amari Cooper at Pittsburgh. You have him wide receiver 21, ECR at wide receiver 17, so not a big difference here. But what are your thoughts on Amari Cooper going into this week, which we thought was a tough matchup until Pittsburgh got, knocked off the field last week?
Yeah, I mean, Amari Cooper is a good receiver. He's a good NFL wide receiver. He's just not. I just don't know that he's going to be that alpha from a fantasy perspective that we want him to be. I don't know. Number one, that the Browns are going to pass enough really to make Cooper the fantasy option we want. I can see Elijah Moore being a guy some weeks. I could see David Njoku being the guy some weeks. Even DPJ or Cedric Tillman getting more targets and playing bigger roles and taking larger pieces of what could end up being a smaller pie. So you add it all up, and Cooper is definitely a guy that I think is obviously worthwhile to start, but I just kind of feel like we would probably expect a little bit too much of him. And until Deshaun Watson has the kind of games that we saw from Tua this past week, those kinds of games where he just starts lighting it up and firing all cylinders as a passer, then I'm going to be kind of muting Cooper a little bit. So I'm definitely starting him. I'm just having lower expectations, I think, than what most people do.
Yeah, I think there's a pretty healthy wide receiver rotation going on there too. Elijah Moore, Donovan Peoples-Jones, they were drawing up deep shots to Marquise Goodwin last week. They were getting a lot of people involved. So, I don't know if he's going to be a monster volume play, but still a solid receiver. So, all right, let's get up next to Nico Collins, home against the Colts. You got a wide receiver 40, ECR wide receiver 45. I don't know. I'm just I might have that backwards. But I'm just kind of out on this Texans offense in general. So I don't know. Do you have any hope here for Nico Collins?
I like Nico. I married into a Michigan family, and I got a chance to see him play in the big house, which is kind of cool. But he looks like the alpha in Houston from a target perspective and from usage perspective. But for whatever that's worth, but really what that value is kind of a mid flex option at best. And if you're in leagues where you're starting three wide receivers. So he's a guy that I think is a kind of a do I roster him? Do I not? Kind of a guy. So. In regular sized leagues. So does he have upside? Yeah. But is he ever going to reach it? I don't know that this is the year with the way CJ Stroud looks. So that's the issue, is I think the quarterback kind of holds him back from being something.
Yep. He did draw 11 targets. So there's a lot of usage there week one. Maybe I should be higher on him, but I kind of just want to see it 2 weeks in a row with him before I get too excited. So, all right. What about Kendrick Bourne against Miami? It's kind of same thing here. Are we kind of not fading the hype on the good week one here with Kendrick Bourne?
Yeah, well, I think extra consensus is 71 and I'm 64. And I think it's crazy that consensus, myself included, gives him virtually no chance whatsoever of being such of even a flex option after blowing up last week as one of the best options in all of fantasy. So on behalf of all the fantasy pros rankers, I'm ashamed and I apologize. there's just so many talented players in the NFL. And that's the thing with the Patriots. Do I have confidence that Kendrick Bourne's going to be a week out, week guy where I can plug him in and he's going to light up the scoreboard? Absolutely not. So there's going to be weeks where Juju has a game. There's going to be a week where it's Mike Gesicki is, you know, they remember that they actually added him in the offseason. There's going to be weeks where other people step up. So I don't know. I think Kendrick Bourne's a guy that we kind of expect him to have a game like that here and there, but it's definitely stretched to expect any kind of continuation of the greatness that he showed last week against the Philadelphia Eagles. And I, by the way, Bradbury hurt, by the way, before we forget, James Bradbury not playing tomorrow night against the Vikings. So that could be good news for Jordan Addison, potentially. Yeah. And we had a touchdown in week one. So if you're on the fence about whether to start Addison or someone else, know that there will be no James Bradbury tomorrow night.
Yeah, and Vikings seem pretty intent on throwing the ball a lot this year. So there should be some volume. They didn't seem too committed to the run. Maybe that was just because it was Tampa Bay. But yeah. Okay, let's get to our Discord sit start. Another positional crossover here. All right, someone in our Discord named Player to Be Named Later. I'm sorry, I don't know your actual name, but Player to Be Named Later asked us flex play. We've got Akers versus Jackson Smith and Jigba here. So Cam Akers or JSN, who you got here in a flex play?
Well, I have some trust issue with Cam Akers just because the Rams have some trust issues with Cam Akers. So the matchup with San Francisco is not helping. So we talked a little bit about Kyren Williams beforehand. And Kyren Williams had was definitely looked like a guy that they were trying to feature. We heard a lot of a pretty steady drumbeat about Kyren Williams last year. And then he ended up getting hurt, and we never saw what they were really planning to do with him. And I think we got a pretty solid glimpse that they really do like him, and they really do want to use him. And that's not good for Cam Akers. So, but add that to the matchup against San Francisco, and I look at JSN, and I say, you know what? He wouldn't be the first rookie wide receiver to score on the Lions this season because Rashee Rice just did it last week. So why not? I'd say roll with JSN.
Yeah, I would go with JSN as well. I don't think we can trust the Rams' backfield right now in general, but – it was Kyren Williams, 53 snaps to Akers, 28. Williams ran 29 routes to Akers, 4. He was out carried by Akers, but yeah, that's pretty big split there. So I'm starting Kyren Williams over Akers in general. So that means I'm going to start JSN over Akers. So yeah, I'd roll the dice with JSN. He's got enough talent. I'd say go for it. Okay. Let's get quickly through quarterback here. We're just going to go through some streamers. Benjamin Howler's got a great QB streamers article up if you want some more details here. But Drew, I'm just going to run through some names here. Tell me if anyone stands out as a streamer for you this week. We've got Jordan Love against Atlanta. We've got Mac Jones against Miami. Sam Howell at Denver. Matthew Stafford home against the 49ers. And Derek Carr at Carolina. Those are kind of our best options under 50% rostered on Yahoo. So anyone stand out there to you if you're in a pinch and you need a quarterback this week?
Well, I mean, I don't think we can discount Jordan Love. He was the quarterback 3 in fantasy last week. That's without Christian Watson. So that was impressive to me. I think that we have to look at that. And his top receiver, Romeo Doubs, played with, on a hamstring that we weren't really sure if he was going to even suit up. And he ended up having, 2 touchdowns and a heck of a day. So I think we have to look at Jordan Love as a guy that we're comfortable streaming. And I do worry about the game script situation with Atlanta, who wants to control the football. I don't know that he'll have quite as many opportunities as he would against the Bears. We'll see. But the Bears are also a team that like to control the football whenever they can. We saw that last year. So I think if he did it against the Bears, then he probably can do it against Atlanta, especially if he happens to get Christian Kirk back. So I definitely endorse Love for sure. Brock Purdy is not on this list. He was 56% owned, so he's just outside the cusp. But he's that means he's close to, he's not owned in close to half the leagues. So to me, I look at that, and against the Rams, yeah, sign me up after what he did against the Steelers. So he's a guy I'm looking at as well. I saw Howell on there. I support that. And one guy that's not on this list is Baker Mayfield. So Baker Mayfield would just miss being a QB1 last week. He was quarterback 13. And that's without Godwin even getting involved. So he's a guy that I'm also not discounting either.
Yeah, and there are definitely some players that you might have already been able to add that are over the limit now. I mean, I was able to get Jared Goff in a league after he was dropped. Like, there's some decent options out there. I think if you're going for a floor play, I don't mind Derek Carr at Carolina, 40% rostered. Carolina was good against Desmond Ridder last week, but I don't think we can judge the Falcons when we're diagnosing an opposing defense and their passing defense. I don't think the Falcons are the right test. So Carolina wasn't great last year. We'll see how they are against quarterbacks this year. I want to go with Matthew Stafford just for talent. He looked so good last week. I would just caution against San Francisco. It's a tough matchup. He only had one passing, one rushing touchdown combined in his two games last year. The Rams scored a total of 23 points. He played better against them in 2021, but I mean, he still had a 6-5 touchdown ratio in three games, touchdown to interception ratio. And that was also a Super Bowl year with Cooper Kupp on the field. So I really want it to be Matthew Stafford. I don't think I want to roll the dice against this 49ers defense right now, even if they are at home. So I guess it's Carr. Hopefully you picked up someone else though. All right, let's get on to some tight end streamers here. These are also options under 50% rostered on Yahoo as of Wednesday night. So these are all changing. But we got Juwan Johnson at Carolina, Adam Trautman home against Washington, Gerald Everett at Tennessee. There's a bunch of names here, Drew. Jake Ferguson, Zach Ertz, Hayden Hurst, Hunter Henry, Luke Musgrave. Like, no, none of the tight ends did well last week, so everyone's in play. So do you have any tight end streamers here that really stand out for you?
Well, I think towards the bottom of this list are some interesting names for me. So Jake Ferguson actually led the NFL this last week in expected points. Unfortunately, he didn't put up the points that were expected. But yeah. The fact that to me, it gets my interest, though. And you think about the fact that last year, Dalton Schultz, who was persona non grata in Houston this past week, was a feature of that offense last year. And Jake Ferguson is every bit as physically talented, in my opinion, as Dalton Schultz. So that's not saying a whole lot. He's not exactly, doesn't exactly have Kyle Pitts' metric. Or anything like that, but I think Ferguson could be somebody that in a game script situation against the Jets, where you've got lockdown corners and you've got a great secondary, I think Ferguson could end up playing a bigger role than we think. So I think he's an interesting streamer to me. Zach Ertz had 10 targets, leading all tight ends last week. He had what, 6 catches, but he only had 21 yards, which is pretty sad. what we did not see in the box score was that a touchdown catch went just off of his fingers. It's just thrown a little bit too high by Josh Dobbs. So I think that the fact that they're looking at for him in the red zone to me and targeting him at a high rate makes me interested against the Giants defense that absolutely got just lit up last week. So I know that the Cowboys defense, I think, scored as many points as the offense did, to be fair. But I think Ertz is somebody that's interesting as well if you need a tight end. And the last three names, Hayden Hurst, he could be the alpha in Carolina. He could be the top option in that passing game because we don't really know what's going on with those wide receivers. Hunter Henry, we should have kind of seen that coming, I guess, in a way, because he was the de facto tight end before Mike Gesicki came in. He already knew the offense. He already had a rapport established with Mac Jones. So maybe we have that order mixed up. Maybe it is Hunter Henry that's going to be the tight end one there. We'll see. And then Luke Musgrave, the rookie. We don't start rookie tight ends, do we, or do we not? I don't know, but he's a physical specimen, and he's one of these guys that has those metrics of those kind of outliers, if you will. And I guess he had a few big catches. He did leave a couple of things on the field there, but I think opportunity is going to be there for him. So I don't feel quite as comfortable in him as some of the other names above the list, but he's definitely somebody that should be on a radar.
Yeah, tight end is a mess. It's it's so hard to decide right now. I still think Juwan Johnson is a good combination of having some ceiling and some floor. He's probably still my top choice for the year. I'm kind of out on Gerald Everett, Drew. Like, he had 2 catches on 3 targets. I think there's just too many options for the Chargers right now. Even Donald Parham was catching touchdowns, the second tight end. But you could make a case for Zach Ertz, for Hunter Henry, for Luke Musgrave, for ceiling, for Jake Ferguson. Like, it's all the options are kind of the same. I think I would shoot for upside here. I think I would go for either Juwan Johnson or Luke Musgrave. I guess Zach, I don't know what to do with Zach Ertz. I'll be honest, like 10 targets, 21 yards receiving, like any other player, 10 targets would be way more than 8% rostered as bad as tight end was. Like, I think everyone has forgotten about Zach Ertz. So I don't know what to do with him. I don't know if we just stay away, or I don't know if everyone should be out there and adding him, because 10 targets, that's awesome at tight end.
Yeah, I feel like it's Moneyball, right? And I'm saying, this is Zach Ertz. He's a Super Bowl champion with the Philadelphia Eagles. You can make an argument that he could potentially be a Hall of Famer someday. His fatal flaw is he plays for the Arizona Cardinals, and only got 21 yards on 10 targets. So yeah. I kind of feel like that's what's happening here with Zach Ertz. So we'll see. I think he's a matchup guy for me. But we'll see.
All right. Final word. I will say Musgrave. He fell over on a big play, and I think he got overthrown on a big play. So he could have had a monster week. So I think if you want to swing for the fences, go for Luke Musgrave. But yeah. I don't know. It's tight end. It's always a mess. So, all right, let's wrap things up. Defense here. Let's go for some streaming options. Under 50% rostered. I'm going to rattle these off real quick, Drew. New York Giants at Arizona, 32% rostered. Browns at Pittsburgh, 49%. Tampa Bay versus the Bears, 29%. Colts at Houston, 9%. Houston on the other side against the Colts, 2%. And then the Bears at Tampa Bay, 2%. I just wanted to throw in a bunch of the weak quarterbacks and let you have your pick. So what defense do you like here?
I like the first two, actually, the Giants and Arizona. We talked about how Dobbs is so inefficient that he couldn't even help Zach Ertz get more than 21 yards on 10 targets. So I think that's part of it. That whole offense is, the whole team is just a disaster. So I think the Giants defense is going to come in angry after being embarrassed on national television against the Cowboys. And I feel for what they're going to do to the Arizona Cardinals. So I think they're probably the number one. And then right behind them, I think Cleveland, the way they played against Cincinnati coming in against Pickett, and that Steelers offense has a lot to prove. It is a divisional game though. And it is a road game for them in Pittsburgh too. So I think you and I need some notes. We're talking about it could be a trap. It could be.
Easy here. The right? Browns were way too good. The Steelers are way too bad.
Yeah. So I'm more comfortable with the Giants there as a streaming option. And I think the third choice for me would be the Colts. They had some injuries last year on defense, and they're healthier now than they were last year for sure. And we talked before. I've already beaten CJ Stroud up enough. I don't want to do it again. But you have a situation here where you have defense hungry with talent against a rookie quarterback who has shown nothing and is not mobile and is not going to be able to kind of create plays on his own like Anthony Richardson can. So I'm not feeling the other way around. I'm not feeling Texans versus Colts, but I am feeling Colts at Texans.
Yeah, my favorite is the Giants against the Cardinals. I kind of think my second favorite, honestly, is Tampa Bay home against Chicago. Maybe I'm rolling the dice against a talented quarterback like Justin Fields, but Tampa Bay is really good at stopping the run. We're assuming they can do that again this year. And if the Bears can't run the ball, there could be a lot of sacks here. So I don't know. I could see a really nice game script for the Bucs at home. I guess their offense worries you some, so maybe they turn the ball over a lot. But I wouldn't be surprised if they get up and Bears have to pass and there's a whole bunch of sacks there. So, again, some decent options. Giants, Browns, Bucs. I don't mind any of those. All right. Well, I think that wraps up week two. Unless, Drew, were there any, anyone we missed here? Any takes you really want to get off your chest? It's a lot of wild stuff happens week one. We try not to overreact too much, but did we miss any overreactions that we need to get out here before we get out of here?
No, I mean, I think the overreactions, I think we kind of talked about those a lot. I will say this. I did a Twitter space last night with Brandon Lane. One of the things we talked about was from a waiver wire perspective were some guys that we hit on a lot of these guys, but from a running back perspective, three guys that I'm looking at adding if I have room. One would be Tyjae Spears. If anything at all happens to Derrick Henry, the way he's looked, I think he could be an absolute smash. Roshan Johnson got some run for the Bears. I know it was late in the game, so it would look potentially a game script thing. But we know he's a tremendous pass blocker, which is rare for a rookie. Anything happens to Khalil Herbert, then I think Roshan's going to play a pretty big role. He's a solid pass catcher, too. So I think we're kind of sleeping a little bit on him. He's only 16% owned. And then here's one interesting one, too. We have an IR spot in most leagues, right? And if you're not using one and you have the ability to do this, pick up Jeff Wilson Jr. He's only 26% owned. Stash him on your IR. Do we really believe that Raheem Mostert is going to stay healthy for an entire season? This is how this works. One guy goes down, another one comes back. So by the time Raheem Mostert goes down, Jeff Wilson Jr. will be healthy. You can plug right into your lineup in a prolific offense. So that's something else that we can kind of keep in our back pocket.
Yeah. Love it. I picked up Tyjae Spears in my home league. He actually got more snaps than Derrick Henry last week, and that was a close game. So they're using him. We'll see. We'll see if Henry stays healthy. He's probably not going to win any leagues for you. Spears isn't, but if something did happen, that could be a big pickup. So yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking for right now, this stage of the season, like looking for those home run swings. I can scrape together a running back two in week 14 when we get there, but let's get some high upside players on our bench and hopefully we hit one that can kind of swing a league for us. That's what I say. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
All right. Well, I think that wraps us up. I don't know. Anything, last things you want to plug here, Drew, before we get out of here? I'll let you finish us off here.
No, like I said, we look for that Sit Start article coming out. It's a tremendous effort by our staff. I'm super proud of the work that they do. Of course, What We Saw will come out every Monday morning, as it always does. So you can find that on X. You can find that on Reddit, of course. And that's all for now.